sweet voice that scraped at the back of my spine. "No rest for the wicked, is there, Amy?" Chapter 14. A chill rushed through my body. I should never have come with Mombi, should never have trusted Gert. But what choice did I really have when I was standing in the palace dungeon, about to go on trial for a fate worse than death, the tin soldiers advancing? It's not like I had a ton of options. "She's one of you?" I asked. My voice echoed through the cave. Was this some kind of trap? Was this Dorothy's idea of a twisted punishment? They'd rescued me, cleaned me up, and now they were just going to turn me over to Dorothy's evil pink BFF? Like hell. I took a step back, and another. Then I turned toward the mouth of the cave and began to run. I'd have to navigate the weird maze of caves we'd come through. But it beat being trapped in the room full of witches with crazy superpowers behind me. And if Grandma Gert could read minds, who knew what the others could do? No, I had to get out of here. Out of nowhere, I slammed into a cold, hard surface and then slid awkwardly onto the stone ground. But there was nothing there. I'd run into an invisible wall. Glinda's laugh echoed around me. I guess it probably was funny. From her perspective, I mean. I must have looked like a duped wily coyote falling off a cliff. I felt my face turn red. I wasn't embarrassed. Or at least, I wasn't just embarrassed. I was scared. And I was angry. But I couldn't fight it as an invisible hand clawed into my shoulder, pulling me up to my feet. It sent me standing again, turned me around to face my captors, and marched me back toward them. "Amy," Mombi said warningly, "we made a deal. Remember, you agreed to join us when you took my hand." "I didn't know what I was agreeing to," I said, twitching against Gert's hold on me. "Your ignorance makes no difference. The spell was cast. You're bound to the order now." "Bound?" "When I rescued you from your cell, it was under the condition that you would join us." "You agreed." "The spell was cast, and I couldn't undo it if I wanted to." "You're one of us now." I crossed my arms over my chest and glared at Glinda. "I know what you did to the Munchkins," I spat at Glinda. "You may look sweet, but I know who you are."
"Oh," Glinda exclaimed. She laughed again, high-pitched and lilting. "I'm not who you think I am," she said.
She didn't so much stand as pose, seemingly acutely aware that she was the pretty purple flower in a sea of gray and brown and black.
"I'm not Glinda. I'm Glamora, her twin sister. She's the good witch. I'm the wicked one. Of course, she's also the one who's turned Oz into the hellhole it is now, so it's really all relative." Then that laugh again. I eyed the witch suspiciously.
"A twin?" That seemed like a convenient excuse. As I thought back to my first day here in Oz, it was true that she didn't look exactly like the woman I'd seen in the field. Mostly it was a matter of style. Rather than Glinda's bouncing curls, this witch had her strawberry blonde hair pulled into a severe bun. And though her dress was just as fancy as the one I'd seen Glinda wearing in the field that day, it was simple and elegant, nothing like the frilly nightmare Glinda had worn.
"You say wicked like it's a good thing," I said.
You're getting the hang of it. Glamora's voice was glittering mischievously. Down is up, up is down. Good is wicked. Wicked is good. The times are changing. This is what Oz has come to. I looked around at the faces of the wicked, or formerly wicked. I wanted some answers. How did you find me? I asked slowly. How did Mombi know I fell from the sky? How did you know I was there in the palace? We have eyes within the palace, and the palace has eyes everywhere. The rest, I'm afraid, I had to obtain from you. The thought popped into my head, a thought that wasn't mine. Amy, sit. Let us explain, Gert said, this time out loud. I ignored her command and her concerned gaze. I didn't want to look at her. Sit, she repeated, this time a little louder. I resisted, but found I had no control over my own limbs. It hadn't been a request. Fighting each step as I went, I walked over and sat down in a cold metal chair. Oz has changed, Gert said. The trees don't talk. The pond of truth tells lies. The wandering water stays put. The land of naught is on fire. People are starting to get old. People are forgetting how it used to be.
It used to be the three of us would never have imagined we'd be standing in the same room together, Mombi said in her raspy voice. She gestured to herself, Glamora, and Gert. The boy still hadn't said anything. He was just standing with his arms folded across his chest. He didn't really look any happier to be here than I was. Wicked witches aren't supposed to work together. But that was before Dorothy. Gert could see that I wasn't buying it. More than see, I guessed. She could read it in my mind. I wondered if she was included in the once wicked, too.
We call ourselves wicked to show that we stand against Dorothy and everything she represents, Gert said. Wickedness is part of Oz. It's part of the order of things. It's always been the good versus the wicked. Magic can't exist without goodness. Goodness can't exist without wickedness. And Oz can't exist without magic.
No matter what Dorothy might think, Mombi said. Glamora, show her.
Glamora waved her hand across the stone table, and it rippled as its surface transformed into a dark pool of water. Then she waved her hand again, and a picture began to form in the pool, reflecting up from the bottom. It was a map, and it was divided into four equal triangles, each one its own color. Blue, red, yellow, purple. At the center was an irregular blob of green.
This is Oz, Glamora said.
One by one, she pointed at each of the quadrants.
Munchkin Country, Quadling Country, Winky Country, Gillikin Country.
Blue, red, yellow, purple. As she pointed, their names appeared in dramatic script.
Here on the edge,
she ran her finger along the perimeter of the rectangle,
is the deadly desert. It protects Oz from outsiders. No living thing can cross the deadly desert without using powerful magic. Anyone who touches its sands will turn instantly to dust. Or that's how it used to be.
She jabbed a long purple nail at the blob in the center.
And this is the Emerald City, where Dorothy lives.
Then she passed her hand over the pool again,
and the colors disappeared, replaced by shimmering white dots, little pricks of light covering every inch of the map.
"The white lights represent Oz's magic," Glamora said. "It's lifeblood. This is what Oz used to look like. And this," she snapped her fingers, "is what it looks like now."
The light dimmed and faded until most of the map was a dull, washed-out gray, dappled with a few gaping black holes here and there. There were still a few glittering spots spread across Oz's four quadrants, as well as one spot in the south that was particularly bright. But other than that, the vibrant, shimmering landscape of just a moment ago was gone. Except for at the very center of the map. The green blob was glowing with more intensity than any other spot, burning so bright that I had to squint to look at it. I looked up at Glamora, and then around the table, where Mombi, Gert, and the boy were all watching me expectantly.
"We need your help," Mombi said.
"The magic is disappearing from Oz," said Gert.
"It doesn't look like it's disappearing," I said, gesturing toward the center of the map. "It's just moving."
"Correct," Glamora said with a narrow-eyed smile. "And can you guess why it's moving?"
I looked at her blankly.
And then it dawned on me.
I remembered the pit in Munchkin Country that my trailer had fallen into, and Glinda with her Munchkin machine. I remembered what Indigo had told me about magic mining.
"Someone's taking it," I said.
Glamora arched a perfectly plucked eyebrow, waiting for me to figure out the rest.
"It's Dorothy," I realized.
"Dorothy's stealing the magic."
"Now you've got it," Glamora said. "And losing its magic to Dorothy will mean the end of Oz. That's why you're here. We need you to stop her."
I sat up straight. I didn't know the first thing about magic. I didn't know the first thing about Dorothy.
"Me?
I just got here. How am I supposed to stop anyone from doing anything?" All eyes turned to me at once. The boy fixed me with an especially hard gaze. Finally, Mombi spoke.
"Simple. You're going to kill her."
She looked right at me and said,
"Dorothy must die."
Chapter 15. I opened my mouth to protest, but all that came out was laughter. Everyone was surprised, no one more so than me. I tried to stifle it, but it had been so long since I'd found something funny, and soon I couldn't control myself. It all came spilling out. The fight. Getting suspended. My mother jetting off to her tornado party. The trailer lifting up off the ground and landing me here. I thought about who I was back in Kansas, and who I was in Oz. What had I done to make them think I was a potential teen girl assassin? I mean, I got suspended for not punching Madison Pendleton. I had maybe been responsible for Indigo's death, but it was only because I'd been trying to save an innocent monkey's life. Taking someone down off a stake in the ground was the opposite of taking someone out. This was madness. Across the table, the witches just sat there staring at me like I was a crazy person while I laughed hysterically. The boy frowned so hard his eyes turned into slits. Finally, after a few minutes, I managed to calm myself down and wiped my eyes with the back of my hand.
"You want me to kill Dorothy?" I said.
It was so ridiculous that I didn't even know where to start.
"That's the idea,"
Glamora said. The look in her eyes said she didn't think it was very funny at all. I couldn't believe they were being serious. I think you've got the wrong person. Before I got here, the last fight I had was with a pregnant girl, and I lost. I saw you back in the palace, Mombi said, in your cell. You managed to hold your own in there. I don't see why you couldn't do the same with Dorothy.
I had to admit that was true. But I was still sure that the knife Mombi had given me had done half the work. And anyway, that was different, I said. That was magic, I'm sure of it. But I couldn't kill someone. I wouldn't even know how.
We'll teach you, of course, Glamora said. Everyone has to start somewhere.
They were acting like we were talking about learning how to sew. This is not what I signed on for. When I had met Indigo on the road, I was just planning on making my way to the Emerald City and maybe getting one of those cool moving tattoos. This was way heavier than anything I expected.
Listen, I said, I have my own problems. I'm sorry about what's happening to Oz. I really am. But I don't see what you think I can do about it. I'm not even from here. I wasn't from here. But even as I said it, a little part of me couldn't help but feel that because of Indigo, because of Ollie, because of my time in the cell, I was linked to Oz somehow.
Glamora cocked her head.
Dorothy's not from here either, she said, and look what she's done with the place.
Gert drove her point home.
It's precisely because you are not from here that we think you can do this. You're from the same place as her. You know how her mind works. You understand her.
I wasn't from here. I was from Kansas, just like Dorothy. I'd come to Oz on a tornado. Dorothy had changed their world once, and now they expected me to help them change it back.
People from the other place have always had a special place in ours, Gert said. The wizard, Dorothy, now you. We don't know what power it was that brought you to Oz. But we know that if you're here, it must be because you have a role to play. We want to make sure it's the right role.
I shivered. The story was true. The Wizard of Oz had been real. Dorothy Gale had really been swept up by a tornado and brought to the Land of Oz. True, what I was living now didn't seem like the kind of storybook tale I was used to. But it didn't mean they didn't exist. For the first time, the boy spoke up. His voice was low and gruff. Gert, Glamora, and Mombi believe that you are our only hope. He sounded like he wasn't so sure about that. My job is to train you.
Are you a witch too? I asked.
It came out in a more confrontational tone than I'd meant it to, but I didn't care. The boy looked offended. I'm a warlock, he said dryly. Or a wizard, if you like that better. It doesn't really matter, does it? Gert looked over at him as if remembering her manners.
Amy, this is Nox. He's the newest member of the High Council of the Order of the Wicked. He's the strongest fighter we have.
Good for him. No offense or anything, it's just, I'm not a killer. I am not the girl you're looking for here. I think it would be pretty amazing to know what you guys know. But you all have magic. You know what you're doing. I'm sure you can handle her without me.
I probably should have been scared of these people. They called themselves the Order of the Wicked, after all. But talking back to them felt good. Then again, Lately, I didn't seem to be able to keep myself from talking back to anyone, really.
You haven't been trained yet, Glamora said. You don't know who or what you are yet. Oz is different. You can be different here. You can be stronger. We'll teach you how to do all of it. To fight. To use magic.
Amy, Gert said. She placed a reassuring hand on my back. We're going to teach you to be a hero.
Me.
A hero. The idea of having power, of learning magic, rattled around in my head. But reality chased after it. Missing Mom. Scary Dorothy. A circle of self-proclaimed wicked witches who wanted to make me into an assassin. Besides, even if they could teach me all that stuff, it wouldn't change who I was on the inside. Salvation Amy from Flat Hill, Kansas. Just a trailer park girl with a bunch of stupid dreams that would never come true. Weirdly, something my mom had told me once came back to me. You are not where you are from. She'd meant it to cheer me up, to make me believe that growing up in Flat Hill didn't have to define me for the rest of my life. But the witches thought I was special because of where I came from.
It's more than that, child. Much more.
Gert was fishing around in my brain once more. I looked at Knox again. He stared back at me and gave me a shrug like, see if I care. He was the only one, except me, of course, who didn't seem thrilled about this whole idea. Even if I agreed with him, I couldn't help taking it a little personally. What did he have against me anyway? What happens if I say no? I asked. You can't say no, Mombi said. The pact, remember?
I told you,
Knox said, not even bothering to look at me.
Just because someone dropped out of the sky doesn't make them the key to saving us.
What was wrong with these people? I felt my blood begin to boil. Knox turned to Mombi and shrugged. And that shrug is what put me over the edge.
I'm in, I said quietly.
Mombi looked at Gert, who nodded as if to say that my words were true. But they weren't. I had to say yes to joining the Order. I didn't seem to have a choice in that. I was bound by the pact I'd made with Mombi. But I was determined to find a way out of the whole teen assassin part. And Gert knew it. A few minutes later, Gert led me to my room.
We let Glamora decorate. Of all of us, she misses the creature comforts of Oz the most.
My cave room wasn't pretty. It was majestic. It was the kind of bedroom I'd always wished for growing up. There was a circular bed that seemed to be sunken into the center of the floor, piled with pillows and silky bedding in rich shades of red. And in the center of the ceiling, instead of a chandelier, there was another upside-down tree. This one was way smaller than the one I'd seen before. And it was in bloom. Black branches held out strange but beautiful poppy-like blossoms, big and white with a blush of pink almost the exact color of my hair. The pale gold walls were covered in wallpaper, with those same pink flowers bursting across it. When I looked closer, I realized they were actual flowers. More tiny flowers grew along vines that stretched from the floor to the ceiling, stopping in the middle to swirl into paisley loops. Beneath my feet, a rug made from golden fur rippled. What happens now? I asked. You lock me in here until I agree to be your killer and actually mean it? Because I know that you know I didn't.
No. We train you. I know that you aren't ready, child. Just put one foot in front of the other. The rest will come in time.
She sounded so sure, like she knew something that I didn't.
And if it doesn't?
What would they do to me if I didn't do what they wanted?
There's something you don't know about being bound. We can't hurt each other as long as we are in the circle. There is much to fear outside the circle, but you don't have to fear that.
I felt myself exhale and nodded slowly. Whether or not she was telling the truth, her answer would have to be okay for now. I just wished I could read her mind, too.
No matter what, you'll still be a witch.
But what kind? I asked.
Good question, child, Gert said, slinking off into the dark.
Chapter 16. I was standing in the middle of an all-white cave. Knox had led me there, then excused himself to change into clothes that he could better torture me in. I waited impatiently. If I was being honest, the decor of this cave was kind of freaking me out, which was saying something considering all the others I'd seen. I stood barefoot on the skin of some giant animal I didn't recognize. Maybe it was some magical Oz beast or something. A track of fire lined the ceiling, illuminating the cave. The white stone walls looked like some kind of stone, opal, I guessed, that shimmered with layers of other colors depending on the light. White, razor-sharp spikes jutted out around me like some kind of medieval climbing wall. Scattered around the room were strange iron machines that looked like either exercise equipment or torture devices. Training with Knox was going to be fun. I was already wearing the training uniform. It felt more like lingerie than athletic wear, with a silky tank top and pajama bottoms. The top was clingy, and it had some sort of bra thing built in that made my flat chest look a little less flat. Say what you will about these witches, but they valued style. Giant swings hung on opposite ends of the cave. Of all the places to sit in this cave, they looked innocent enough. I ran my finger along the seat of one and slipped into it. When I shuffled back with my feet, I realized the air was beginning to fill with smoke coming from the floor. I jumped up quickly. The smoke began to take shape. Familiar figures materialized before me. I backed away, but there was nowhere to go. I was already pressed up against the jagged wall of the cave. They must have followed me here, traveling through shadows the same way the Tin Woodman had appeared on the road when he found me, Indigo, and Ollie. I wasn't going to stand back and let them take me away for a trial. I looked around wildly for a weapon, and spied a rack with some kind of torture devices in the corner. I could only imagine what Knox had planned for us today. I stretched my arm out, but it was too far to reach. I inched toward it. Dorothy's pink lips pouted at me as she advanced. Her gingham dress, half-formed, was just smoke and a hint of cleavage, but her face was there in all of its terrifying glory. And her laugh echoed in my ears even though her plasticky mouth didn't move. The Tin Woodman stood a couple of steps behind her.
"Knox!" I screamed.
Before Dorothy could reach out one of her glinting red nails at me, Knox appeared in the entrance of the cave. Insanely enough, it looked like he was almost smiling.
"Help me!" I cried.
He walked right through the image of Dorothy, and just like that, she disappeared. The Tin Woodman disappeared too, and the ears and hair and tail that I assumed would have made up the lion vanished with a growl. I was left standing in the white room, staring at Knox.
You sure took your time, I yelled.
I just wanted to get your adrenaline going. He smiled a cocky smile, rocking back on his heels.
He had done that?
Even as my anger rose up, I noticed, despite myself, how good he looked in his training gear. He was more muscular than I would have thought. Biceps and quads, and muscles I didn't know the names of made up his possibly magically enhanced form.
Why would you do that? I snapped. What is wrong with you?
He just shrugged. It was turning into his signature move. I considered storming out, but my feet stayed rooted to the furry ground.
How did you do that?
What I see in my head, I can project out into the space, but it can only last for a few seconds. I just meant to give you a scare, see how good your reflexes are.
I saw something like that on the road to the Emerald City. Queen Ozma was giving a speech.
Not the same thing, really. That was more of a capture.
A what?
He leaned in close. I didn't move. I hadn't exactly spent a lot of time alone with any guys. Tutoring Dustin hardly counted. And he wasn't a witch, or wizard, or whatever it was I was supposed to call Knox. He was annoyingly, and maybe not so annoyingly, even hotter up close.
Ouch!
I felt a pinprick of pain on my scalp as Knox leaned back, holding a strand of my pink hair. He pulled something out of his pocket and folded it together with my hair in his fist.
Memoria, he whispered.
When he opened his hand, there was an emerald inside.
This moment is now captured forever. There are emeralds like this embedded in the road. They're meant to deliver messages, scare people, spread Dorothy's decrees, basically a way for the palace to keep us in line.
He tossed the emerald on the ground. An image rose up from the stone, hazy at first and then snapping in focus. I was rolling my eyes at him. He was leaning in to pull my hair. But it almost looked like he was giving me a kiss. The image disappeared as quickly as it had appeared.
So is that your superpower? Making people see things that aren't there?
Knox didn't answer. He disappeared in a blink and reappeared beside me.
I can make them see things that are there as well.
Like Mombi said, I'm a fighter.
We should get started.
When he moved into his fighting stance, I noticed a speck of green paint in his black hair.
What?
He asked, noticing my staring. He must be Oz's mysterious graffiti artist. The one tagging the frowny faces I'd seen in Munchkin Country.
Nothing, I said quickly. I'm ready.
He was working really hard to put up the whole fighter front. But I wondered what else was there beneath the surface. What else it meant to be a boy witch.
Liar,
Knox whispered with a mean glint in his eye. Don't worry. The spring will be able to heal you up when you break something.
I'd prefer not to get hurt in the first place, I countered.
Is wit highly valued in your world? You seem to rely on it.
Is being a total jerk highly valued in your world?
Sarcasm was how I survived back home. I wasn't about to give it up now. His gray eyes opened a little wider.
Your words will do nothing against her unless you can use them in a spell.
I sighed loudly. If they wanted me to train, I would train. A few self-defense techniques would certainly come in handy around here. For that matter, they'd come in handy if I ever made it back to Dwight D. Eisenhower Senior High and had to face down a leaner, meaner postpartum Madison Pendleton. Still, just because I was willing to learn how to fight, It didn't mean I was going to assassinate anyone. I suspected Nox knew it. Why don't you just give me one of those magical knife things and be done with it?
I could do that, he mused, pulling a knife from one of his black boots and throwing it from one hand to the other. He tossed it in my direction, but I wasn't fast enough, and it fell to the floor with a clatter. I let it lay there, wishing I'd never said anything.
But you might drop it, he finished with a smirk.
I wasn't ready, I argued.
Would you rather have the knife or be the knife? It's that simple and that hard.
He opened his hand and the knife whizzed into it. I'd seen Mombi do the same thing before. He slid the knife back into his boot, then spread his arms out wide at his sides, daring me to punch him. I curled my hand into a fist and took a weak, half-hearted swing at him. Nox hopped back and rolled his eyes.
Give me a break, he said. You have to try or it's no fun.
Before I could respond, Nox took his own jab at me, aiming right for my chin. I rocked back on my heels, barely getting out of the way in time. And then, without thinking about it, I hit back. For real now. This time, I connected square in the center of Nox's chest. My fist hit a hard wall of flesh and muscle. My knuckles stung from the impact, but he didn't flinch. It was like he hadn't even felt it. All he did was laugh.
All right, he said. Well, that's something at least. Now do it again. This time, I'll try too.
I looked at the cocky expression on his face. I wanted to wipe it off just to show I could. So I swung with all my strength and almost fell over from the momentum as he stepped easily out of the way. His smirk hadn't wavered for a moment.
Keep going.
I kept punching, getting angrier and angrier with every try. Nox dodged each blow as smoothly as if I were moving in slow motion. It took me until I was sweaty and out of breath to realize that something wasn't quite right. Nox was more than just fast.
That isn't fair, I said. You're using magic.
Of course I am. Lesson one, she'll be using everything she has against you, and I promise it will be a lot more than I'm using right now.
He had a point.
Fine, I said. Then why are we even bothering at all?
When he opened his mouth to reply, I took it as an invitation to hit him right in the solar plexus. His eyebrows shot up as his arrogant smirk transformed into a grin.
Aha, he said. Lesson two. Your fists aren't your only weapon. Your weapons won't be your only weapon either. Dorothy's biggest vulnerability is her...
I kicked him in the stomach with everything I had, and he went stumbling backward, his mouth wide with surprise. That would show him not to underestimate me. But instead of retreating, or even slowing down, he came flying right back at me. This time, I was ready for him. I ducked. Over the next hour, Nox didn't let up. He just kept coming at me, using his fists and feet and elbows and knees and everything else he had. The whole time, he never stopped talking, pointing out everything I was doing wrong. And everything I was doing wrong was everything. The way I was standing, the way I was avoiding his gaze, the way I was holding my hands. But for all I was doing wrong, there was one thing I was doing right. I wasn't letting up any more than he was. I was aching and exhausted, but I kept going.
Stay loose, he said.
I didn't know how he had the breath to keep talking when he was moving twice as fast as I was.
Don't waste your energy keeping your muscles tight. Don't focus on where I am. Focus on where I'm going to be.
Before the sentence was finished, Knox was gone. I spun around just as he materialized behind me, already ready for him, and caught him right in the jaw. Finally, for the first time, he flinched in pain. But before I could draw my arm away, he'd grabbed me by the wrist and held my closed fist against his face. I tried to pull free, but I couldn't. He just stared at me, his gaze intense. I couldn't look away any more than I could move my arm. Energy crackled between us, and I felt a strange pull to him. Moth to flame. Magnet to magnet. Stupid girl to impossible, slightly mean witch boy, wizard, whatever.
Close your eyes, he said. I want you to feel something.
I already feel something, I said. Tired.
Just do it, Knox said.
So I closed my eyes and felt a strange, warm energy pulsing through my body, starting where my fist still touched his face, and traveling up through my arm and shoulder into my chest. It wasn't hot, and it wasn't cold. It was like nothing I'd ever felt before, including the time when I was little and I put my finger in a light bulb socket to see what would happen. That had hurt like there was no tomorrow. Like the surge of electricity was killing every cell as it flowed through my arm. This was the opposite. This felt like every inch of me was waking up.
What is it? I asked. Isn't it obvious?
He let go of my hand and it dropped to my side, heavy as stone.
It's magic, he said.
Suddenly, I felt a breeze. I opened my eyes. We weren't in the training area anymore. Instead, we were standing at the edge of a grassy plateau that jutted out from the mouth of a cave at the top of a mountain. The sun was bright and perfect, and the sky was brilliant blue with just the slightest tinge of lavender. I looked down over the edge of the precipice we stood on and caught my breath. We were, don't look down, high. We were skyscraper high. Not that I had ever been in one, but I imagined this is what it felt like. The drop between us and the treetops was dizzying. Below us was a vast expanse of wildness. In the distance, fields and flowers gave way to a lush, dark forest. Farther on the horizon was a hazy, shimmering mountain range that blocked the rest of Oz from my view. Mountains so high that their peaks were hidden by a thick veil of quickly moving clouds. Everything was still and quiet. This was a different quiet from the creepy, dead quiet of Munchkin Country. This quiet was pristine and charmed and full of life. It felt like Knox and I were the only two people in an undiscovered world.
How do we get out here?
I asked. My voice came out in a whisper. He looked at me like I was the dumbest person alive.
You have to stop asking those kinds of questions, he said. You know exactly how we got out here.
Of course I knew. It was the same as the answer he'd given me before.
Magic,
I said under my breath, without even really meaning to.
Yep, he said. I zapped us up here. I can't work the same kinds of teleportation spells that Mombi can, so we didn't go far.
The Order's headquarters is all inside these caves. He gestured at the cave opening behind us. I breathed deep, enjoying the first fresh air I'd tasted since I'd been taken to the Emerald Palace who knows how long ago. I felt it buzzing in my lungs, and my whole body tingled. It was the same feeling I'd felt back in the caves when I'd touched Nox's face and closed my eyes. "I think I feel it," I said finally. "The magic."
"You can't not. Not up here," he said.
"This is Mount Gilliken. It's one of the most magical spots left in all of Oz. Dorothy hasn't quite gotten to stealing it yet. It's too much trouble. See those mountains a ways off? They move. Every night, they rebuild themselves. Every day, they're different than they were the day before. Can't build roads through them. Can't even draw a map. You never know what you're going to get. Some days they might be covered in snow. Other days, they could be so hot you'll get sunstroke, or anything in between. People go up those mountains and they never come back. Sure, you can get past them. You can fly or teleport or whatever, but it's not easy. They're part of what keeps Gilliken Country more protected than the rest of Oz. Still, it's only a matter of time."
"It's incredible."
"All of Oz used to be like this. There was so much magic floating around that you almost couldn't help picking it up here and there. Now most of it's just in a few scattered spots like this, places Dorothy can't be bothered with."
"Maybe she'll never bother," I said. "Why does she need more than she already has?"
Nox snorted. "You don't know Dorothy. The more she gets, the more she wants." "That's the way it is with you people," he said.
"You people? What people?"
"People from your world. Like Dorothy. The wizard. Like you, probably. Magic's dangerous for outlanders. You're not built for it."
"But you're going to teach me anyway. That's what Mombi said."
"They think the risk is worth it," Nox said. "Not everyone agrees."
"You don't think I can handle it?"
"Maybe you can and maybe you can't. I don't really know you." "What I think doesn't matter. The question is what you think." He shrugged.
I shook my head. I needed more.
"It's your choice," he said. "It's not magic that makes you who you are. It's the choices that you make. Look at Dorothy."
"What about Dorothy?"
"That's exactly what makes Dorothy evil."
Chapter 17. After my training session with Nox, it was a relief to see Gert. I didn't know what she had in store for me, but I had a feeling it wouldn't involve having to hit anyone. Despite the whole almost drowning me on purpose incident, and her being up in my brain all the time, she had not told the others that I had no intention of killing Dorothy. I was still confused about what it meant to be a witch. A wicked witch, for that matter. But somehow she seemed less wicked than the rest. Maybe it was stupid Stockholm syndrome, that thing people get where they start liking their captors. But I didn't feel like I was a captive when I was with Gert. Gert's room was like an old-fashioned apothecary, with a wall of glass jars filled with a million different liquids, big canisters heaping with I don't know what, and plants and herbs I didn't recognize. The light was dim, but warm and cozy, too. I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. Although there were candles crowding almost every surface, none of them were lit. Her walls were covered with some kind of white gold, which further intensified the glow. In the corner leaned a broom made out of wood so dark it was almost black, with long, thorny bristles. I reached out to touch it, but drew my hand back when Gert spoke sharply.
"You're not ready for that yet, dear," she warned.
I looked at her, but she smiled like it was no big deal and began to bustle around the cave. "Amy," Gert said,
I know this is all new. I know you're scared.
She walked over to a shelf and absent-mindedly plucked a jar down before glancing at it, shaking her head to herself, and placing it back in its spot.
But we need you, she said. And I have faith in you.
And now, for our first lesson. I like to think of this project as my little get-witch-quick scheme. She giggled at her own joke. She sat back down on a stool on one side of a big wooden table in the middle of the room and indicated that I should follow suit. Every inch of its surface was covered with candles, and as she looked down at them, they began to light, one by one. Gert's face glowed in the light that she'd made. She smiled, a secret, satisfied little smile, and then clapped her hands, and they all went out.
Your turn now, she said.
How? I asked. I was confused. She hadn't taught me anything yet. Wasn't I supposed to say a spell, or wave a wand, or brew up something with Eye of Newt? From what Nox said, and from what I'd seen so far, magic only looked easy. It took concentration and practice and time. Gert waved her hand in the air, and as she did, sparks trailed behind it, like tiny, crackling fireflies.
Think of magic like electricity in your world, she said. In Oz, it's all around you. It flows through the ground and the sky and the water. It keeps Oz alive. In most places, there's not nearly as much as there used to be, but it's still there.
Okay, I said. It sort of made sense, but not really.
To use it, she went on. You just need to know how to find it. You need to gather it up and tell it what to do. It's just unstable energy. Magic always wants to be something different from what it already is. It wants to change. That's what makes it magic. And that's what makes lighting a candle the simplest bit of magic you can do. You just take the energy and you tell it what to be. In this case, heat.
It always wants to be something different from what it already is. Now that made sense to me. It reminded me of myself. I frowned at the candles. I stretched out my fingers and moved them through the still, slightly damp air around me, trying to get back to that place Nox had taken me to, that tingly, warm feeling. Nothing.
You have to want it, Gert said. Do you want it?
Of course I want it, I said. I did, didn't I? I passed my stiff palm over the candles. Again, nothing happened. The wicks remained completely flame-free.
Do you really, child?
Why wouldn't I?
Forget about what you are supposed to do. Just do what comes naturally to you.
I slumped over. I hate to break it to you, I said, but none of this comes naturally to me.
Amy, she said, it will. Soon. What you did in that cell with Mombi, part of that was the knife, yes, but an even bigger part of it was coming from you. You have the talent. Once you learn how to harness it properly, you'll be unstoppable.
I couldn't help but remember the fact that I had hurt someone, or something. He deserved it, but still. It felt so easy in the moment. Maybe too easy. I remembered what Nox had told me about how dangerous magic was, about how it corrupted people from my world, how they wanted more and more. It was magic that had made Dorothy who she was now. What would it do to me? What if, in training to fight Dorothy, I became just like her?
You're not Dorothy, dear, Gert said.
I felt myself shiver involuntarily.
She must have overheard my thoughts. Don't worry. I'll make sure you never become her. I wondered if Gert was making this promise just to stop me from worrying, or if it was a promise she could keep. Which leads us to a very important question. She paused and looked me up and down appraisingly. Who are you? She finally asked.
I pulled back, surprised at the question. What?
If you're not Dorothy, then who are you? I didn't know how to respond. I said.
I'm Amy?
I bet there are a million Amys where you are from, dear. Amy is what you are called. Gert laughed liltingly. One thing you have to understand, she said, is that all magic users have our own specialties. We each have our own affinities for certain kinds of magic. It has to do with your personality. Once you understand what kinds of magic you're best suited for, it will be easier. But before you can do that, you need to know who you are. The essence of what makes you, you. So, who are you?
I thought about it. Before I'd gotten to Oz, I would have been able to answer the question more easily, I think. But I also think I might have answered it wrong. Now, I didn't know where to begin. Was I the Amy Gum I'd always been? Who took care of my mother even though I sometimes hated every vomity, thankless moment of it? Who got by in school not even breaching the surface of all that potential that Dr. Strachan said I had? Was I Salvation Amy, the girl who always took the bait when Madison Pendleton pushed me too far? The girl who couldn't keep her mouth shut literally when her life depended on it? The girl whose future looked as bleak as the Kansas sky she stared at every night through her tiny, circular trailer window. Or was I someone more extreme? Someone I never imagined? A killer. A warrior. A girl who could stab someone in the face and know that she was doing the right thing. A girl who had strength she never even knew about. Who am I supposed to be? I asked.
It's not a matter of who you're supposed to be. The truth is, I already know exactly who you are. But my telling you, that won't do you any good at all. You have to be the one to figure it out. Here, try again. Light the candles. I focused in on myself. I imagined the candles flickering and then lighting up. But still, nothing happened. Gert's face didn't betray any expression. I searched it for disappointment, but I couldn't find any at all. She just clapped her hands together and smiled.
I think that's enough for today, she said. You'll meet with Glamora next. Now that should be interesting.
I shrugged and stood up. As I got to the doorway, though, I turned back around to face Gert one more time. What about you? The question that had been bouncing around in my mind came tumbling out just like that. Are you really a wicked witch? I asked. You said you were, but you don't seem wicked to me.
Gert's smile faded. That's a complicated question. She replied shortly, averting her eyes.
I think I can handle complicated at this point, I said.
She just sighed. They used to call me the Good Witch of the North, she said, but that was a long time ago.
What happened to you? What makes a good witch turn wicked? And if she couldn't stop herself from wickedness, how could she stop me from following Dorothy's path?
I knew Dorothy when she was young, when she first came here, when all she talked about was home. But I saw something else in her even then.
She wasn't honest with herself about what she wanted. She said she wanted home, but she also wanted recognition. She wanted the